Welcome to a podcast summary of the Insurance Contracts Project as at 15th of April. My name is Andrea Pride. I'm a Senior Technical Manager at the IASB and the Team Leader on the Insurance Contract Project. I'm joined today by Stephen Cooper, IASB Board Member, and Matthias Seidler, a Practice Fellow. As with all podcasts, the views expressed today are the personal views of the three of us. We will discuss the Board's tentative decisions, but we want to remind you that all those tentative decisions are subject to future deliberations, further consultation, and the drafting process. In today's podcast, we want to talk about the discount rate for non-participating contracts. In February, the Boards made the tentative decision to confirm the discount rate proposed in the exposure draft, that the discount rate for an insurance contract should reflect the characteristics of the liability. However, we propose that you could use a top-down or a bottom-up approach to derive that discount rate. Today, we'll talk about the methodology for determining the discount rate using a top-down approach. So, I understand that there's been some concern about the Board's tentative decision. Have the Boards changed their position on discounting the liability, or have they made any sort of different sort of decision on asset-based rate from what people have understood in the past?
Thank you, Andrea. I'm glad to comment on that. Some may have interpreted this way because we have now said that the starting points could be assets for a top-down rate. However, the objective of the discount rate clearly has not changed. It should be a discount rate that reflects the characteristics of the liability. And the starting point needs to be an asset because even risk-free rates we need to determine based on assets. What we have done is we reacted to concerns how to determine the risk-free rate in some countries and also to concerns how the liquidity adjustment can be derived. However, again, this is not an asset-based rate as you would commonly refer to it.
I think that's right, Matthias. I think it's very important for people to understand that we're not advocating the use of an expected return on assets as a discount rate for a liability. This has been a long-held position of the Board, not just in this project, but in many other projects as well, where this is relevant. So pensions accounting, asset retirement obligations, which are funded liabilities, for example. In all of these cases, the Board has taken the view that a measure of a liability should reflect the characteristics of the liability, and that how you fund that liability should not affect the measurement of that liability. So investing in higher risk assets with a higher expected return does not in itself reduce the burden of the liability and reduce the measure of that liability. So I think that's a very important principle. And the fact that we're talking about assets in the context of deriving a discount rate certainly does not mean that this is an expected return on assets.
Okay, so it seems to me that the Boards are really trying to say that you're using the assets to as a starting point, really, to derive the discount rate. It's not necessarily what people have commonly believed to be an asset-based rate, as the term might be used at the moment. Why did the Boards discuss this particular method again?
I think one reason why we did that is we got feedback after the decision. People have started to ask us how their method would look like, how that would work. They started to interpret the decision, and really people wanted to understand better how a top-down approach could be appropriately applied. We received feedback from preparers in the insurance working group, and also auditors asked us, and there was some sort of demand for a framework and a question of answer type examples.
Yeah, I mean, I guess this goes back to the ED, doesn't it? The problems people identified in doing a bottom-up type approach, and I think we felt that in many cases a bottom-up approach would, even in practice, be interpreted as a top-down methodology anyway to identify the illiquidity premium. So I think we're just being more explicit, saying, look, you know, there isn't just one way of calculating the discount rate applicable to a liability. You can start from different points to get there.
Okay, well, thanks for that background. Let's talk a little bit about how we expect people to derive this discount rate. The staff paper this month talks about types of adjustments that we might make. Could you walk us a little bit through the thought process there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the most important thought is, what is the goal of the exercise? And the goal is, again, and even if I'm repeating myself, identify a discount rate that reflects the characteristics of the liability. And consequently, we needed to have some ground rules there. And an insurer determines an appropriate yield curve based on current market information. So that is the first ground rule. And if he doesn't have current market information observable, he goes back to a level 3 type fair value measurement, where he identifies what the yield of that instrument would be. And then from that starting point, that could either be your actual asset portfolio or a reference portfolio, we identified certain adjustments. One is the type 1 adjustment. We call it a type 1 adjustment, which adjusts for differences between the timing of the cash flows of the assets in the portfolio and the timing of the liability cash flows. If this is different, you need to make an adjustment. The second type of adjustment is the adjustment for risks inherent in the assets that are not inherent in the liability, to ultimately get you to the goal discount rate that reflects the characteristics of the liability.
Yeah, I think it's very important that we recognize that these discount rates are subjective. They're inevitably going to be. I mean, we could choose a risk-free rate, we could choose a high-quality corporate bond rate, a swap rate. Even those are subjective to a certain extent, you know, the difficulty of really identifying risk-free. So there's bound to be difficulties within the calculation that we're asking people to do. However, I think we felt it was important that we got as close as possible to the characteristics of a liability, particularly in terms of illiquidity. So many of these perhaps slightly easier market reference rates themselves are not really that suitable. So, you know, we're trying to get something that people will feel is relevant and appropriate for the liability. But, you know, clearly there are adjustments and difficulties that people will have to deal with. And, you know, it's no different from level 3 fair value measurement, for example. There are other areas in accounting where these approximations are required. I mean, particularly the type 2 adjustment, which I think we'll go on to talk about now, is subjective. But we feel that we're getting towards the true discount rate for the liability through this methodology.
Yes, and just picking up on your comment about the type 2 adjustments, the risks inherent in the assets really refers to whether or not you make an adjustment for asset spreads, really. And there's been quite a lot of discussion about whether an insurer should remove the entire spread, asset spread above risk-free. Could you explain a little bit more what the board's intention is there?
Yeah, and I think the point is easiest explained here, Andrea. When you look at a bond and the components that are in the yield of a bond, and we were trying to cluster what components does the yield of a bond have. First of all, there's clearly the risk-free element. Then there's also credit risk in that yield. And then there's liquidity, market sentiment, and market inefficiencies that you could see in current observable market rates. And this is why we said this part above risk-free that you see, meaning credit risk, liquidity, market sentiment, and inefficiencies, we wanted to look at. And this means that the asset spread above risk-free is not entirely to be removed. There's the credit piece that we think should be removed, and that is, from our perspective, the expected defaults and an additional credit risk premium that you can observe in market interest rate. So this is what we need to do in a step one, take out the credit risk, and there will be inevitably at the end be as a remainder illiquidity premium, market sentiment, and market inefficiencies, which we said at the end to be the illiquidity premium.
This credit premium is the important part of this. And I think some people have interpreted the board's decision as merely removing the expected credit losses. To my mind, if one takes the contractual yield to maturity of a bond and takes out the expected credit losses, you end up with an expected return on that credit asset. And that's not what we're after, because, of course, that's an asset return. There still remains within that asset expected return a premium for risk, risk of uncertain level of defaults in respect to that instrument. So it's that additional risk premium that we need to remove. Now, of course, it's a challenge to work out that. There are models available to do so. It's not easy to directly observe that rate, but that's the amount that we're trying to get people to take out in addition to the expected credit defaults. What we're left with then is, in a sense, an illiquid risk-free rate, a sort of a market rate that reflects better the characteristics of the liability. Obviously, the amount of liquidity then depends upon the exact instruments that you start with, but I think that's where perhaps the flexibility of using either an asset, the actual asset portfolio, or the reference portfolio comes in, because you can then control for that.
So what you're saying really is that when you've got the asset spread and you know that it's got credit risk and illiquidity risk in it, that we're focusing on identifying the credit risk part of it and stripping that out.
It means that we can get to the illiquidity risk element and the other things that Matthias talks about as a balancing figure, as the residual.
Rather than have to identify it directly.
I mean, of course, I think people are developing models, and a number of ways have been proposed for directly identifying the illiquidity premium. And we've said that you can do bottom-up as well, and that's fine. But as an alternative to directly identifying it, doing the top-down methodology so that we're left with this non-investment risk spread is, I think, another practical way of getting to an appropriate discount rate.
So what we're really seeing, it's the end point that's the important bit. It's about getting to that liability discount rate. What do you see as the main implications of this, and why bother going through the two different approaches?
So I think the main implication for the industry is if you do a top-down approach, you actually will have a discount rate for the liabilities that is not completely disconnected from the developments in the markets. And I think a lot of the debate about discount rates was triggered in 2008 with the liquidity crisis, where you could see that governmental bond yields, which were considered as risk-free instruments, their yields dropped, corporate yields increased. That was mainly a liquidity issue, market sentiment and inefficiencies. So if you use a top-down approach, and the way we described it, the discount rate reacts to these market inefficiencies, and this could help people understand a little better that we don't disconnect the discount rate from the market.
I think one of the key things that has come up during this project is the whole issue of volatility and whether volatility that we reflect in financial statements reflects economic volatility, or it's merely an accounting construct and the result of inappropriate accounting. And I feel that there are elements of mismatch that occurs within insurance businesses, mismatch between the assets and the liabilities, which should result in volatility, should result in gains and losses being reflected in the financial statements. But of course, we don't want volatility arising simply because of changes in market sentiment and the like, changes in liquidity, which don't really create an economic gain or loss. And so what we're trying to do is to remove that part of the asset yield that doesn't relate to the liability. And there will be differences in value of the asset and liabilities arising from those. But to the extent that changes in asset yields are due to other factors, then I think it's right that we leave those in both the asset side and the liability side, and therefore we end up with a lower volatility as a result. So I think we're getting much closer to a faithful reflection of the economics and the gains and losses by adopting this approach.
Of course, one of the inevitable things about this approach is that it's going to be hugely subjective. It's going to depend very much on where you start, how you determine the adjustments. Would you like to comment a little bit on the role that we see disclosures having for this?
Yeah, and I think that the boards have identified that already and say that if we provide that flexibility to preparers, and there is a lot of subjectivity involved, we also hear the users telling us they want to understand how the discount rate is determined, and that people don't just find discount rates and move on. So we will likely ask for a description of the method that people have applied and the adjustments that they've used. Some board members have already asked for disclosure of the yield curve, which we think is something that is improving comparability throughout the industry. And another point that we will consider during drafting of the final standard is how can we avoid inconsistent application over time.
Disclosure is always a difficult area because, of course, people don't want us to give reams and reams of lengthy disclosures, which can be counterproductive. But at the same time, we need to make sure that users of financial statements fully understand what's been done, and that the assumptions which are being made that might result in different measurement from between different entities are fully disclosed. So we need to find a way of dealing with those issues in an appropriate manner. And I'm sure we'll be talking to many people as we develop these disclosures to try and make sure we've got the right balance.
Okay, well, thank you, Matthias and Steve. I look forward to those continuing discussions on insurance and this topic in particular. As a reminder, the official record of the ISB decisions is ISB Update, which is available on the ISB's website. Thank you very much.